Show. Howdy, you rebel scum, working class or punk rock politics, art and activism, awesome outlaw music, rebellious rock and roll and more, tune in to Sound Resistance. We're on almost every Friday morning at 10:30 a.m. to 12 noon with your hosts, me, Dr. Joey Only, Mr. Mike Zinger, Rowan Lipkowitz, and the entire Pedal Revolutionary crew. We break the rules on CFRO 102.7 FM Co-op Radio.
From the burning of the flares, stocks are a-selling and the hammers ring. This is gonna be the next big thing.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, BC. Today is Friday, January 14th, 2011, and I am your co-host, Carissa Thorpe. I am joined in studio today by my co-host, Allison Cole.
Hello.
And our guest co-host, Alyssa Ray.
Hello.
On today's show, as I promised last week, we'll give you all the details about the special advanced screening of the feature-length film Forks Over Knives that's happening next Thursday at the Central Branch of the Vancouver Public Library. I had the opportunity to learn more about the film from executive producer Brian Wendell in a telephone conversation yesterday, and will share with you some of his thoughts. And later in the show, I'll be talking about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s valuable social contributions and how his life's work stands as a testament to the power of one to make a change in this world. And I hope you'll find some inspiration to either continue or start to speak up for animals who cannot speak for themselves. Martin Luther King Jr. Day is this coming Monday. Allison, did you have some items that you wanted to discuss?
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the story in South Korea that's happening right now. Have you both heard about it? Animals being
buried
alive.
I kind of saw it
alive.
On Facebook, but didn't read it. Sometimes I avoid things that are really awful.
Animals are being buried alive in South Korea by the thousands, by the millions. And it's just
what's the reason?
Well, foot and mouth disease. So,
which doesn't affect humans, by the way.
And and you know what I read too is that that meat that's eaten, like has meat that's been contaminated with foot and mouth disease, is not bad for humans. Like it. So why don't why don't people just eat?
People are just trying to protect their stock, I guess, and not lose money, I guess.
Anyways, on vegan.com, Eric Marcus wrote a really interesting editorial that I thought really summed up the situation really well. So I thought I would just read that and feel free to join in. So he says, when a disease outbreak strikes animal agribusiness, here is South Korea's method for dealing with the problem. They dig an enormous hole. They dump live animals into it by the thousands and use excavators to push the dirt back over it. Over the past 2 months, to combat a foot and mouth disease outbreak, the country has killed more than 1 million pigs in this way. Additionally, South Korea also ordered the killing of just over 100,000 cattle. As it set about killing all these cattle, the government showed staggering incompetence. It procured an anesthetic that can kill when injected in large amounts, but ran out partway through this effort and proceeded to bury the remaining cattle alive. In addition to the foot and mouth outbreak, avian flu has simultaneously descended on South Korea, and yet again, the country has responded by burying the animals alive. 2.7 million live birds have so far been bagged and buried. If you consider animal agribusiness a desirable thing, then the bird cull can probably be looked at as a necessary public health measure. There is, after all, no vaccine that could protect these birds from swiftly mutating avian flu. And if the virus went on to infect many or most of the chickens in Korea, it would gain the opportunity to jump the species barrier and unleash the scenario every public health expert fears, a deadly, highly contagious human flu that could kill many millions of people. Yet there's no reason why burying animals alive would ever be regarded as an ethically acceptable choice. Between the use of a euthanasia drug and the time needed to make an injection, it needn't cost more than 50 cents per chicken to kill each animal prior to burial. So this is really a matter of South Korea and its factory farmers being unwilling to pony up about $1 million for the sake of sparing these chickens the most horrific of deaths. Where the pigs were concerned, the situation is even more unforgivable. In essence, the mass killing was a direct result of the government gambling that they could cheaply end the foot-and-mouth outbreak by killing just 12% of its pig population rather than inoculate each of the country's millions of pigs for against the disease. When this limited call failed, it forced the government's hand and they issued orders to begin a mass killing. It's not as if South Korea can claim they were caught off guard and lacked time to prepare. They twice dodged catastrophe earlier in 2010, in January and again in April, by nipping two outbreaks in the bud at the cost of killing 56,000 animals. What this means is that prior to the reemergence of foot and mouth in late November, the government had at least a seven-month window of opportunity to implement a vaccination program throughout its livestock industry. Instead, it decided to roll the dice, and more than 1.4 million pigs and cattle have now been brutally killed and discarded as a consequence. Unlike the United States and Britain, which have some large and influential animal protection groups with the clout required to ban the most extreme animal abuses, there are no comparable groups in South Korea. So despite the fact that South Korea is a member of the World Organization for Animal Health, the country has ignored the group's guidelines forbidding the burial of live animals. So what we have in South Korea is a country whose leadership is incapable of acting with any decency where farmed animals are concerned. We've got no prospect of change from within, since the country lacks animal charities with the power to force quick reforms. And given the little mainstream reporting has so far occurred, there's a little chance of international condemnation forcing Korea to remedy these abuses. Stephen Bant of Korea Animal Rights Advocates describes the animal's ordeal, and this is what he says. In the current call, as in previous years, pigs in the back of trucks are simply tipped into a pit. These animals, many fully grown, would fall up to 4 to 5 meters into the hole, only to have other pigs landing on top of them. We can assume that many are injured, perhaps with broken bones or killed in the process. Hundreds of pigs would be crammed into the same hole. At other times, pigs are herded near holes and pushed in with excavator arms. The animals are being buried alive at such a furious pace, about 4 million so far, that some rural Koreans are turning on their taps to find bloody water pouring from their pipes. Yeah, really. What we are witnessing in South Korea is unconscionable animal cruelty occurring on a massive scale and no reliable way to repeat this scenario from playing out again in the future. It's a situation the entire world is ethically obligated to confront. So those are Eric Marcus's words, and I have a few things to say about this. First of all, the bloody water. I mean, you must think that the Koreans are going to be concerned about that. That's just completely unacceptable and gross.
But at the same time, it's almost a good thing they have that coming to do something like this. You should have some sort of a consequence that you have to live with.
Yeah, well, it's the people that are having to live with it, but it's the government that are initiating this. And as he says here, there's no way to prevent this from happening again because it's the government that is supporting this, right? So it blows my mind, you know. And as they mentioned that there's not a lot of animal protection support in South Korea, or in Korea, I guess. So they don't have these organizations, like big animal protection organizations like we do here, saying stop, right? Yeah. At least not in their country. I'm sure they will be in I know there's a group in the UK already, a group that has to do with protection of farm animals, and they're saying to contact their local Korean ambassador. That's something that we can do here as well. There is, on the petition site, there is a petition that has been started. And I'm not sure who it goes to, but I thought we could post that on the website, like, later after after the show today.
It makes me feel really sick to think about that, and it also brings to mind, like, the Holocaust, when they were just, like,
they're just
live,
dead bodies.
Open
There's pictures. There's a, actually, there was one mainstream newspaper that covered it. It was the Daily Mail in the UK, and they have pictures of, actually, one picture is a bunch of little piglets, which is really sad. Another picture has full-grown pigs being chucked into this deep pit, and you know it's not right. It's obviously not right. It is heartbreaking. It's something that shouldn't be happening, and it's quite sickening. And it's something that, as Eric Marcus is saying, isn't being brought really to the mainstream media. I think people, I mean, people should be outraged at this. It's one thing to kill animals and slaughter them for food, but it's another thing to bury them alive. I mean, we've got to draw a line somewhere where people have compassion for animals. So that's what I have to say about that.
Thank you, Allison.
The Last Bastion, Barbarians, the longest running classical music radio show in Canada, West Coast Classics. Rare and unusual classical music from all over the world, from 2,000 years ago to the present, all presented in its social and historical context. West Coast Classics, every Wednesday morning from 9 till noon on Co-op Radio.
You are listening to the Animal Voices radio show here on 102.7 FM CFRO. So we've got our upcoming events. Tomorrow, Saturday, January the 15th at 12:30 p.m., there's going to be a vegan Indian buffet lunch at Annapurna Vegetarian Restaurant hosted by the Veg Meetup Group, Vancouver Group. This is at 1926 West 4th Avenue in Vancouver. Here is a great chance to enjoy an all-you-can-eat vegan Indian buffet, which I wish I was going to, but I can't do it, so I'm talking about it instead. Do you like Indian food, Alyssa?
Hello, of course.
Okay. This one sounds like a great one to go to. It's dirt cheap and it's all vegan. So even the naan and the dessert is vegan. Mm. So nothing contains dairy in this meal. It's a rare chance for all you can eat.
I miss my naan.
Yeah.
So yummy.
Yeah. So this menu includes lentil soup, five kinds of curries, including chickpea, vegetable, and eggplant. The naan, you've got rice, papadum, salad, relish and chutney, pickles, and dessert, and maybe a dosa, they said. So all you can eat for $13 per person. Ooh. This includes HST, the tip, and also the chip-in for the meetup fee. To register, just go to meetup.com and search for Veg Meetup Vancouver. There are 50 people going so far, and there's room for more.
Mm, sweet deal.
Yeah, totally. On Thursday, January the 20th, starting at 7 p.m., there will be an advanced film screening of the film Forks Over Knives, which we'll be talking about later in the show, presented by Liberation BC and the Vancouver Public Library at the Vancouver Public Main Library at 350 West Georgia Street in Vancouver on the lower level. The feature film, Forks Over Knives, examines the profound claim that most, if not all, of the degenerative diseases that afflict us can be controlled or even reversed by rejecting our present menu of animal-based and processed foods. This is a special free advance screening of the film in partnership with the Vancouver Public Library. Forks Over Knives is due out in theaters in March. That's this year. And I don't know if that means it'll be coming to Vancouver in March. So I would say if you want to see it, this is your chance to go see it. It's free. That's on Thursday, January the 20th. And the film starts at 7 p.m. and arrive there early to make sure you get a seat. And here's another exciting event coming up. On Saturday, January the 22nd, from 6 to 8 p.m., there's going to be a Sarah Kramer fundraiser for the animals at Carmivore, the vegan shop, which is at its new location now at 610 Columbia Street in New Westminster. If you've been to Carmivore before, make sure you don't go to the old location because they've moved, so that's 610 Columbia Street. Join international best-selling vegan cookbook superstar Sarah Kramer at Carmivore on January 22nd for an amazing fundraiser event for the animals. Proceeds from the event will benefit the Hearts and Noses Pig Sanctuary, which is a home to pigs who have been injured, abused, neglected, and abandoned, located in Mission, BC, and we've actually featured them on the show a few times before. And also the BC Poodle and Small Dog Rescue will be benefiting as well. They're a rescue group based out of Victoria, BC, mainly focused on rescue of poodles and poodle mixes, as well as other small breeds in need. Tickets to the event cost $25 and include all of the following. So if you go, you're going to get to meet and greet with Sarah Kramer in person with autograph signings. You get to meet Janice from Hearts and Noses Pig Sanctuary. You get a copy of Sarah Kramer's 2011 Go Vegan calendar. You get some vegan hors d'oeuvres, a yummy baked vegan good from Carmivore's New Deli, and that'll be either a croissant or cupcake. There's going to be a silent auction, an exclusive sale event, a 50-50 draw, one free ticket to the Carmivore gift card raffle, and a free Carmivore store coupon, plus a lifetime of good karma for helping the animals. To buy your tickets, go to carmivore.ca. That's Carmivore with a K. And are either of you planning to go?
I'm hoping to go.
Again? Yeah, it sounds great.
It's on the 22nd. I'm planning on going. I think I will do it.
I'll be really tired at work until 6 in the morning after, but yeah, I'm hoping to go.
Are you crazy? Oh, man. Yeah, that's it's not something I would do, but I haven't been to Carmivore yet, so definitely.
I haven't either.
I want to check it out.
I've been to the old one, but the new one I'm really excited
about. I really
want
to check out the new one. A friend of mine works there now, too, and I found a gift card that I got a long time ago for Carmivore, like two Christmases ago, because I haven't been able to get there yet. Yeah. I thought, I've got to spend this gift card.
Well, now it's really easy because they're near two SkyTrain stations.
Yeah. But they're still in the U.S. That's why I haven't gone yet. So,
yeah,
but
it's only a half-hour SkyTrain. I remember I went to the last Hearts on Noses fundraiser with Sarah Kramer, and won a $100 gift certificate.
There you go.
You should buy raffle tickets.
That's awesome. Yeah, we had Sarah on last year, actually.
Awesome.
Also Janice of Hearts on Noses to promote this. And just one other quick thing. I remember we were talking about Cat Craze, that documentary, last week.
Yeah.
And I was saying that I didn't know, or I didn't think it was going to be online. I couldn't find any evidence of that. Well, I get the emails from CBC Documentaries, and they sent me an email this week saying that it's online now.
Okay.
So you can watch Cat Craze in the comfort of your own home. And I just might
surrounded
do that
by
myself.
Cats.
Yes, surrounded by cats. Mm-hmm. And so just check out cbc.ca, and if I were you, I would just do they have a search function in there, search Cat Crazed, and it'll come up to the documentaries page where you can search for that. So if you have an animal or a vegetarian-related event coming up that you would like to have announced in the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it on our Facebook page, which is called Animal Voices Vancouver.
Thank you, Allison. So I'm having a bit of technical difficulties today. I'm pretty sure my computer just completely died.
Oh, my goodness.
So
that means you get to wing it.
Yes. Okay. So I'll kind of have to just go with my notes from the discussion I had yesterday. But as I mentioned at the top of the show yesterday, I had the opportunity to interview Brian Wendell, executive producer of the feature-length documentary Forks Over Knives. Brian was unavailable for a live interview during our time slot today, and I was not able to coordinate a pre-recording of our conversation. So while this is perhaps a little unconventional for radio, I'm going to share with you now some more information about the film, including what Brian and I discussed yesterday. So Forks Over Knives, as Allison was mentioning, is sort of taking a look at the health effects of eating a meat diet versus a plant-based diet, and Brian told me basically that they wanted to sort of come at things from a fact-based angle, and there are a lot of doctors that are featured within the film, including Dr. T. Colin Campbell, who is the author of the China Study, which I think, Allison, you mentioned before was a book that you've
I've read the first two chapters.
Oh,
it's really deep. I have it at home, though, if anyone wants to borrow it. I actually found a really cheap copy recently.
Oh, cool.
But, I haven't. But I know the basics of it.
Yeah,
that
it's very extensive.
Heard a lot about it. Well, the China Study is the longest running study on nutrition ever. And Dr. T. Colin Campbell has been part of that. And what I like about how he writes the book is that he doesn't write the book as a book to convince people. Like, that's not its primary objective, is to convince people to eat plant-based. where he, the way that he writes the book is he tells you about his journey of the beginning of the study, and he came from actually a dairy farming background. Yep. So, you know, he was not pro-vegan or anything at the time. And from, and he goes through the journey of his work and yep. from all these years, I think it was over 20 years, and he shows his scientific results, and he shows, you know, he shows the results of his work and makes and lets the reader decide for themselves that, wow, you know, we discovered, well, Dr. Yep. T. Cohen Campbell and his associates discovered that eating meat isn't good for you. It's clogging yeah. people's arteries and all that. And that, and I think that's why that book has had such a large impact, is because people can decide for themselves. And I know he's featured prominently in this yeah. film, which is great.
And that's sort of the reason that Brian told me, is because not only did he, he's relatable. Like, people can relate to, okay, you grew up on a farm. And yeah. it was the same with the other doctor that's featured, which is Caldwell Esselstyn.
Yeah. Who, they have similar backgrounds, yeah, I was reading the other day.
Which they didn't realize until they started filming. And that's how I'm understanding it as they're sort of the main story in the film. And that was how that came to be, is when they realized the parallels of their lives, that they both came to the same conclusions about diet at about the same time in the 1960s. And that people can just relate to growing up thinking that meat and dairy and eggs are what you need to eat to be healthy, and then discovering for yourself that that's not how it is. And that's sort of what the film is looking at, sort of showcasing to people, is just mm-hmm. these are the facts, and sort of take it to heart as much as you will and consider it for yourself.
And I think they also take you through a journey of several people.
Yeah, there's two regular people,
people are profiled.
Their journey, I'm understanding that they switched to a plant-based diet. And as well, the director, Lee Fulkerson, wasn't planning on being in the movie, but then he went to the doctor during the filming mm-hmm. and the results were just like his cholesterol was through the roof. So he decided, hey, maybe I'll try on this plant-based diet for myself and see what happens.
And he becomes a part of the documentary, yeah. I think. Yeah.
And Brian actually told me that there were some people that when he was putting the production team together, because he's been a vegan for 10 years himself, and he had this idea in October of 2008 after reading Dr. Campbell's China study, that this needs to be a film and it needs to be health-based, because that's what isn't out there, is a film that's strictly health-based. For people to sort of come to this and create a discussion. And he told me that there were people when he was putting the team together who stated specifically outright that they would not be switching to a plant-based diet. Like, he said he never asked people to do that, but people sort of came to it as like
any
fearful
reasons?
That
just
they,
scared
yeah
scared what just, that they might get healthy.
Well, no, I think it was more like they didn't want him to impose like a vegan diet on them. And he was like, oh, I'm not going to try to make you change your diet at all. And it ended up being that so many people on the production team switched to a plant-based diet. He told me that two of the three editors, a lot of wow. people that weren't even that involved, like their attorney and the music composer that weren't even specifically involved in the filming, have switched to a plant-based diet.
Well, what an amazing snowball effect it's had yeah. just for that. And if you think of the people that are going to be seeing the film now, what it'll do for them, hopefully.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sounds and, really exciting.
So there have been, he's been sort of traveling around the country in the U.S. already doing some advanced screenings, such as the one next week. And in Portland, it opened last weekend.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
And it sold out 9 shows.
Wow.
People are standing up and giving them a standing ovation and clapping at the end. And the advanced screening in Austin, Texas, there were 200 people that got let into the screening, and there were 200 more on the waiting list outside that wanted to see it.
And this is in Texas. Yeah. I was just reading in Veg News magazine this morning that the most unhealthy and obese some of the cities.
Yeah,
in,
I think there were
like,
three.
Three of them were in Texas,
right?
Yeah. And you just said this was Houston, though, right?
Or, it was Austin.
Oh, Austin. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Austin wasn't one of them, but still Texas, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure it's kind of all similar around there. That's amazing.
So it's definitely like the film is for everyone, vegans and vegetarians, but also a lot for people who are not vegan or vegetarian, or maybe have never really thought about it.
I hope those people stood up and clapped as well.
He said they were, and that people, I asked what some of the comments were in Portland last week, and he said, people have been saying things like, I'm going home to clean out my refrigerator.
Wow.
And I've been trying to get my wife to switch to a vegan diet for 10 years, and she wouldn't listen to me, and we watched this movie, and now she's decided that she would.
Wow. Yay.
So
that's progress.
Some really exciting things.
Sounds like it might be like shocking people awake, like with just,
yeah,
maybe it's kind of like showing, you know, unhealthy organs and just horror stories and, yeah, stuff. And some people just need that little shake, that little push.
I think I saw a clip or something, a really quick clip on one of the promo videos of them pulling the fat out of someone's vein. So isn't that and that grossed me out, because I'm not sure if I've actually ever seen someone pulling white fatty tissue out of someone's vein before, even though I'm sure you can just Google it or whatever and it'll show up. But I saw a quick clip of that. I think that was yesterday. I'm like, oh, you know, if just for me, because I don't think I have clogged arteries, because cholesterol is what clogs, yeah, your arteries, and there's only cholesterol. You only get cholesterol from animal foods, and there's none of that in plant-based foods, just
well,
so you know.
I think there's a different kind of cholesterol.
There's a HDL cholesterol, yeah,
that
our
body
makes.
Produces anyway.
Exactly, yeah, so. but you can't consume plant-based cholesterol.
Yeah.
You can
only
consume cholesterol that's from animals.
Okay.
So
yeah, a lot of people don't realize that. And
I don't know. I don't think they do.
I tell people that all the time, and they're like, "What?"
I think it's really
simple.
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of people getting educated, you know, or edumacated, or whatever you want to call it, you know. And I think it's films like this that are going to do it. And do you have any idea of how widely this film will be distributed across the country?
I don't actually
know.
I just know that
it's sold out 9 shows in Portland. So there you go. That's a lot. That's a lot.
Like, I know that Portland is sort of progressive, but that sounds huge to me. And he told me
that shows.
He told me that most of the people in the audiences, like, he knows that there's at least 75% of people are omnivores.
Oh, that's amazing that they would even go to a show, go to a screening like that. I wonder if their veggie friends drag them along.
Yeah, I don't know how people are coming to it.
Yeah,
but
if you're listening now, you know, drag your friends to the screening that we're having in Vancouver next week. It's a special screening that we're not going to have one like it for who knows when.
Your friends and your parents and your uncles and aunts, you know, like kind of, I think it appeals to that older crowd, people that have kind of health problems and all that. There's nothing much out there that kind of speaks to that crowd, I think.
Yeah. One thing that I just want to sort of mention that Brian shared with me that I found very inspiring is he actually had no film background before he started the production of Forks Over Knives. He had never even used a handheld camera before.
That kind of reminds me of the making of The Cove, too, when we were talking to Rick O'Berry about that and that project. And look where that film went, right? Like, that's amazing, you know.
Like, if you have some sort of an idea that you think needs to be out there, just follow it. He
pursue,
said
pursue your dream, pursue your goal, and it can happen.
He said that within 3 months, he had assembled the production team from having the idea. 3 months later, the production team was together.
That's one ambitious person.
Yeah. It was just like
amazing.
He met this guy, John Corey, who then introduced him to the director, Lee Faulkner. They sat down and had an initial conversation that lasted 4 hours, and they were exactly on the same page about everything that they wanted to bring to the table for people to see in this movie, and just knew that it was the right partnership.
Yeah, some things I think, like, I don't know, to get woodly
are meant to
be. I think the universe just needs things to happen. A message needs to get out there, and you just need to make a commitment, and if it's meant to happen, it'll just roll along. And I'm just so happy that this is coming out with such a bang. Really excited.
And I asked who this film was made for, and Brian told me that it was made in memory of all of the people who have suffered needlessly and died because of diseases like heart disease and diabetes and all of the diseases of affluence that are largely preventable or even reversible, and to help the people who are currently suffering maybe wake up and consider a plant-based diet to improve their health.
I think that's really appropriate. You know, I think about that kind of stuff a lot as well. Just people that could be saved if they had known, you know. And and we have diseases now that we didn't have 100 years ago, right? Because people's lifestyles have dramatically changed. I think it's due to the, you know, the industrial revolution of all of our technology, obviously. And obviously there's technology that have been saving people's lives, right? But with that comes the technology that is have been killing people indirectly because people abuse it.
Yep.
And people, and it's like a curve, right? You know, people say, oh, we've got this great technology or this great, you know, factory farming. Wow, what a great technology. You know, we can eat all this meat. We can eat more and more and more. Or, and I remember reading in Fast Food Nation, they were talking about flash freezing French fries. And that's why, that's how you get to have so many French fries. Wow, those aren't doing a good thing for people, you know. That's what's causing obesity, all those French fries and all those hamburgers. And so you go up the curve and where people are declining from this. And then suddenly people at, you know, at the cusp of... what's the word? At the cusp of disaster, I think, is when people are apt to change. And I've heard that, I've heard that philosophy before, and I think it's true. And then people are going to be changing and then going down again, back to where they started with healthy lifestyles that I think people had more healthy lifestyles 100 years ago when we didn't have cars and when we didn't have, you know, all this meat eating and animal abuse
and capitalism gone crazy. A lot of it is just corporate greed and anything for a profit, and health just is out the window. It's not,
it all kind of goes together.
Yeah,
and you're right, health does go out the window was when it all happened. That's the last priority, unfortunately, and people have to make it the first priority.
And people thinking like our governments are taking care of us or something.
That was one thing that I asked, what was the most surprising thing that Brian learned in filming, and he said it was just sort of how academic institutions are letting us down in terms of nutrition, like what they're researching, and that's because of outside influence who's paying them to do these studies. And then just one more thing here, I asked what was something that didn't make it into the film that he would have liked to have seen included. And he told me that there was a bit of a panel of the experts that were included in the film, and they were discussing in terms of like organic meat, if that's the answer that people need. And basically they said they really don't believe it's the quality of the meat that's negatively affecting our health. It's just meat
it's
in general.
The meat. Yeah.
And he's hoping that this film will sort of inspire that discussion, and said that it will probably be included on the DVD.
The extras.
There will be a lot of extras, is what he was saying. There was a lot of stuff that they couldn't fit in because it's so, it's dense with info already that it would have been a bit over the top, and wanted to sort of keep it concise.
I would have definitely liked that in there, I think. I don't want people walking
people
away.
People always ask about the organic meat option, you know?
Yeah. And he did say that, they'll be launching a new website called plantbaseddiet.com in conjunction with the March 11th release.
Oh, good.
And then, as well, if you do want more information, such as video clips of that panel discussion, you can sign up for the newsletter on forksoverknives.com, and they'll be sending out things like that in the future and posting it there. And then Facebook is a really great place where a lot of people have been discussing it. He said that's sort of where the discussion is taking place right now.
They
is on their Facebook page.
18,037 people who like their page and looking at and looking at their website right now. Forks Over Knives. We're actually going to play a short video clip from there. It's the directors discussing Forks Over Knives, and hopefully you'll get more information from here as well.
The average American now carries 23 extra pounds.
Heart disease and stroke will claim the lives of 460,000 American women.
We're talking about diabetes and hypertension and bone disease as osteoporosis.
69 grams of fat. You could actually save 12 grams of the fat and half the calories if you simply ate an entire stick of butter.
Food. It's central to our lives and traditions. Every special occasion seems to involve food and feasting. But could some of these same foods, including several that we think are good for our health, also be causing many of our most serious health problems? Indeed, we're facing a massive health crisis. No less than 40% of Americans today are obese, and about half of us are taking some form of prescription drug.
Someone has to stand up and say that the answer isn't another pill. The answer is spinach.
A growing number of researchers claim that if we eliminate or greatly reduce refined, processed, and animal-based foods, we can prevent, and in certain cases even reverse, several of our worst diseases. They say all we need to do is adopt a whole foods, plant-based diet. It sounds almost too simple to be true.
The best way I felt to get this message, this powerful message of this diet and how it can prevent and even reverse disease, was by feature film. We have these horrible diseases, and yet at a time when we're so desperately looking for solutions to problems in our society, there's evidence that there is an answer.
We took the tone we did in this film for a very important reason. We wanted to invite people into a discussion. We got these two world-class scientists, Dr. Caldwell Esselstyn and Dr. Colin Campbell.
You have Dr. Campbell, one of the top biochemists in the world, from Cornell University, Dr. Esselstyn from the Cleveland Clinic.
The parallels in Dr. Campbell's and Dr. Esselstyn's life stories are extraordinary. They were both born a few months apart. They both grew up on farms. They both became very successful in traditional areas of their respective fields.
On one hand, I'm coming from the scientific route, getting some ideas. He's coming from the clinical route and doing some dramatic research. Here's the science, here's the clinical evidence. Put the two together, it's amazing.
They both started out on the other side of this issue.
And ultimately, around the same time, they came to the very same conclusion.
You know, I know of nothing else in medicine that can come close to what a plant-based diet can do.
And I don't care what it says on the front, the back, or the sides.
Look at the ingredients,
okay. And that's all I care about.
In addition to the stories of Campbell and Esselstyn, we also interwove stories of patients to show the personal impact of this powerful science on people's lives.
We really wanted to just get ordinary, regular people. And I think in Joey and Sandera, we have exactly that.
I got two pills I take for my diabetes, cholesterol, high blood pressure. I take Byetta, which is an injectable medicine.
Then I'm cold and I'm sick and I'm fatigued and my stomach hurts. And that's when they diagnosed me with hypertension and diabetes. I was in denial for a while.
Those stories are really powerful because it provides undeniable real-time evidence that shows the effect of this diet on people. On my way over, I drank these two Red Bulls. I also had a 12-ounce Coke and another half of a 12-ounce Coke. It wasn't planned for me to be part of Forks Over Knives. I was going on a research trip to talk to the doctors that we were going to use to treat some of the patients in the film. I said, well, why don't you give me a checkup? We decided to shoot that just for fun. My cholesterol was extremely high, like 240. I'd never been that high before. And more frighteningly, I had a level of inflammation in my veins that said I was at risk for a heart attack. So that scared me. I decided to go on a whole foods plant food diet to see if we could reverse those conditions.
I have five bypass, five. So myself and my wife went to see Dr. Esselstyn.
One category of patients we had were the patients from Dr. Esselstyn's original study that had really advanced heart disease.
I have had two heart attacks before I met Dr. Esselstyn. When I had the second heart attack, the doctor said, I should prepare for death.
They were basically given up for dead by the doctors in some cases. Here they are 20 years later, just absolutely thriving.
It gives you a complete picture that the diet works long term, it works short term, and you can't get better than that.
The whole thing about Forks Over Knives is it's really a message of hope. The best way I felt to get this message out in an unfettered way was by feature film, that no one would be able to interfere with the message that I felt was important to get out there.
To me, the take-home message of Forks Over Knives is that people can have control over their own health outcomes. At the end of the day, information is power. It allows people to have a degree of control over their own health outcomes that the traditional medical system just doesn't give people.
All right, so we're going to post that on our Facebook page, and you can watch that video if you want to see it for yourself. It's very interesting. And now Alyssa has the news for us.
You're listening to CFRO 102.7, Vancouver's Co-op Radio. This is the Animal Voices Show. As Carissa said, my name's Alyssa, and this is the news. This article is called Canada's Seal Deal with China Blasted by Animal Rights Groups. I found this on Post Media News. Canada, which failed in a public relations campaign to convince Europe that the seal hunt is humane, will also flop its insulting attempt to fine consumers in China, animal rights groups said Thursday. This is a slap in the face for China, Chinese culture, and the Chinese people, said Grace DeGabriel, the International Fund for Animal Welfare's regional director in Asia. She said in a statement, China is not a dumping ground for Canadian seal products, and Chinese consumers should not consider the ethical, should not shoulder the ethical responsibility of paying for the cruel slaughter of seals in Canada. The International Fund for Animal Welfare was reacting to the Canadian government's announcement Wednesday that it has secured an agreement with Beijing to allow the export of seal products, including meat, oil, and fur, as early as this year. The IFAW was among the many powerful animal rights groups that successfully lobbied for the European Union seal products import ban, which is currently being challenged by Canada before the World Trade Organization. The IFAW believes that Chinese consumers, like those in the European Union, will not condone the horrific slaughter of seal pups and will reject meat and oil that is tainted by cruelty, the statement said. Animal rights campaigners in China have had recent success fighting activities such as the marketing of ivory from elephants, the slaughtering of cats and dogs for foods, and the sale of tiger body parts and bear bile, said Adrian Heil of IFAW's Brussels office. In China, more than 40 animal rights groups blasted Canada's efforts to find a new market there for the beleaguered sealers, according to Agence France-Presse. Do not give to others what you yourself do not want is an ancient Chinese proverb, Liu Di, head of the China Small Animal Protection Association, said in a statement to the French news agency. It's insulting for Canada to market these products to China. The animal rights movement has gained prominence in China in recent years, especially among younger Chinese, and the government is considering an animal protection law, according to AFP. The International Fund for Animal Welfare's Heil said there's no consumer market for seal meat in the world, despite Canadian efforts that have included photo ops of Prime Minister Stephen Harper and former Governor General Michel Jean tasting seal flesh.
So my question is, why don't they market it to us Canadians?
That wouldn't fly.
The parliamentary restaurant's already serving it, right?
Really?
Yeah. They have it on their menu. Of course, they need to... They need to use it, right?
I can't even.
And Michelle Jean likes it, and apparently.
That is the creepiest video. Have you seen that?
Yes.
That is so
I've seen it.
Creepy. It's like, it feels like she's eating a baby or something.
She
like
is just, eating a baby.
Yeah. I mean, but like, can't people see this? You know, like.
I know.
I mean, really, there's no difference between her eating a hamburger and that, mm-hmm. but it's just...
But I would like that question posed to when a government official, especially our Prime Minister, why won't you market it in Canada? And perhaps, you know, that will elicit a response for him that is hopefully a thoughtful one, and which would probably be Canadians wouldn't eat it because it's disgusting.
Just one quick other story I think I only have time for. I found this on PETA.org. In a landmark ruling, a Rancho Cucamonga, California man was sentenced to 7 years and 8 months behind bars for mutilating and torturing several cats. Timothy Ari Kuiman, who is already serving 5 years in prison for torturing cats, has nearly 3 years added to his sentence after he was found guilty of luring several cats to his Corona, California motel room, where he did some nasty things that I don't really want to read that part because I don't want those images in people's minds. It's really disgusting. Police Sergeant Lori Curran spoke at the sentencing hearing saying that she feared Kuiman would soon move on to human victims as animal abusers often do. She said mm-hmm. Kuiman was the worst of the worst and told him, "You are a coward and you deserve to rot in hell." The judge agreed, calling Kuiman's crimes mind-boggling. This is Kuiman's second felony conviction, so if he ever attempts to harm another animal, he will go away for 25 years under California's three strikes law. Thanks to this no-nonsense judge, the residents of Rancho Cucamonga and Corona can rest a little easier knowing that a violent criminal is going to be safely behind bars for the next 7.5 years. I just think this is great news, great precedent. And
he's probably the first person who's ever gone to jail for that long for harming animals in California, I would imagine.
Yeah, the article didn't say, but I would think that that's probably the toughest sentence. And mm-hmm. I love it. It's
he must have
so
done something
necessary.
Really bad to those cats.
He did.
It's hard for me to believe. It, you know,
torture basically. He's you know, just totally.
Koreans are burying animals alive, but this man does something to cats. Now I wonder if he had done the same thing to pigs, if he would have received that sentence. Probably not.
Yeah, I would really hope so, but I don't know. We have cats and dogs up on a pedestal, so yeah, maybe not. But hopefully in the future.
But at least you're right, it is setting a precedent.
Yeah, yes.
We've got a PRA here for you.
Welcome to Last Call, your jam jar of all that's good and sweet in UK rock and pop, only here on CFRO 102.7. I'm Gary Jarvis, your host, with you until 2 a.m. Last Call is the UK rock and pop music show with a heavy nod to the underground. We're here every Tuesday night at midnight following the Urban Renewal Project. Every Tuesday night at midnight. We're here every Tuesday night at midnight. Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7.
This coming Monday, January 17th, is Martin Luther King Jr. Day in the United States, but I thought I would talk about Dr. King's contribution to society and what we as animal advocates can take from it. Martin Luther King Jr. was a Baptist minister in the American South who believed that religious leaders have public responsibilities, that injustice in any form is not to be tolerated, and that God had called on him to encourage the United States of America to admit that it had mistreated its citizens of African descent who had been subjected to slavery, racial segregation, economic discrimination, and deprivation. It was the upholding of these personal ideals that led Dr. King to become a prominent leader of the African American civil rights movement in the 1950s and 60s, beginning with his leading of the Montgomery bus boycott in Alabama in 1955 and 1956. After Mrs. Rosa Parks, a 42-year-old seamstress, was arrested for refusing to relinquish her bus seat to a white man. Dr. King gave many speeches during the civil rights movement that helped to change history, choosing to lead his followers in the practice of nonviolence modeled after Mahatma Gandhi, who was a strict vegetarian, whose practices Dr. and Mrs. King spent a month in India studying to ready themselves for the movement. The speech that Dr. King is best known for is his I Have a Dream speech that he gave to the crowd of as many as 300,000 people gathered at the Lincoln Memorial for the March on Washington for Jobs and Freedom, in which King spoke of a society where all would be blind to color and rights would be offered equal to all. King's keynote speech was televised and brought his message to the nation on August 28, 1963. The centennial anniversary year of Lincoln's historic signing of the Emancipation Proclamation, which abolished slavery. Author Carol J. Adams pointed out in a recent interview in Veg News magazine in the November and December issue, when asked why meat sexual politics are so deeply embedded in our culture, that dominance provides intermittent rewards, and as we know, intermittent rewards are all that are needed for someone to continue to do what he or she is doing. Through dominance, whether over women, non-dominant men, people of color, or animals, people experience pleasure, the pleasure of consuming or using another. This pleasure exists because of privilege, because of our culture has inequality structured within it. While I don't know Dr. King's views on the treatment of animals, I find it hard to believe he would see the way that they have come to be treated as anything other than unjust and enslavement, be it in the name of science as with the animals tested on in labs even so close to home as at the University of British Columbia, or the artificial insemination of dairy cows to keep their milk flowing and the subsequent separation of mothers and their calves who are often chained to an abysmal fate for the veal industry, or the use of dogs for sport fighting to entertain those who would be so twisted as to watch, and the countless other ways we use and abuse animals each and every day. It can be disheartening at times to think of all that does transpire against the good nature of such kind creatures, but as with the civil rights movement and many other worthy causes that have come into the mass consciousness, for reevaluation over the years, I believe there is hope that we will one day see a world free from animal suffering and which offers non-human animals equal rights, observing that all life is precious and full of value, whether it's yours or someone else's life. While Dr. King's life's work also led him to his untimely death by assassination on April 4th, 1968, and I know that can be a very real and frightening consequence for standing up for what you believe in, I am not asking that you be willing to die for the cause, but I do ask that you think about the millions of animals who suffer and die each day at the hands of humans, and take whatever actions you are able to, whether that's protesting, writing a letter to a company or government official, telling your friends what you know, handing out leaflets, volunteering at an animal shelter, signing a petition, or donating to a reputable and worthy animal charity, or things like we've discussed today, such as taking friends and family to the Forks Over Knives screening next week. And to all of those out there who are willing to fight, even to the death, for what they believe in, to gather the necessary information and bring about justice, such as the people who filmed The Cove, enduring themselves the abuses and threats of those who either don't understand or have a vested interest in the treatment of animals, remaining as it is, may we all offer up the utmost of respect and appreciation and take a moment, any chance we get, to say a resounding thank you for all that you do day after day. That's about all that I have, but do you guys have anything to discuss?
I did a recent walk for the farm sanctuary, and one of the chants that I really enjoyed was "One struggle, one fight, human freedom, animal rights." Mm-hmm. It's all the same package. We're all fighting for the same thing. And my deep wish is that Martin's message, resonates for people, and people wake up to animal suffering and see the slavery there. And I know there's so many amazing people fighting for the civil rights movement and, feminist fighters. And I just, it's all the same.
Yeah.
And it's, I think people who are, trodden on those, in those kind of ways, can look at animals and see, that just have empathy for that struggle.
I always recommend the book The World Peace Debt by Dr. Will Tuttle as something to read in regards to how it all interrelates with each other. It's kind of disconcerting when people say to me, "Well, why animals? Why not people, right? You're a person. Why not stick up for your own kind first?" But it's, as you say, it's all interconnected, and if you need to be convinced of that, I think this book should actually be required reading for everyone. Anyways, The World Peace Diet, please read it. We have had Dr. Will Tuttle on the show before, so you can probably even look up his interviews on our website, animalvoices.org. And we've had him twice on the show, actually, this past year. And the things that he has to say, that book just covers a lot. It's really in-depth, it's very philosophical, and it makes a lot of sense. He goes into a lot of issues about animals, but not just about animals, but how it all relates in with human culture, in human tradition, and humanity as a whole. So we actually have time to play this clip right now, if you wanted to, since... Do you want to explain what it is?
It's just a clip from Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech, the speech that he's best known for.
"That one day, this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that one day, down in Alabama, with its vicious racists, with its governor having his lips dripping with the words of interposition and nullification, one day right there in Alabama, little black boys and black girls will be able to join hands with little white boys and white girls as sisters and brothers. I have a dream today. Be made straight, and the goal of the Lord shall
All right. I just wanted to say one thing as well about the quote that I had with Carol J. Adams. I kind of felt that, like, what I took from it was that we've sort of replaced enslaving humans with now we enslave animals. So I think that's something really powerful to think about.
I think human slavery is still on the go.
It definitely happens, but I think it's more like the way that it was so acceptable to everyone.
Yeah.
It's
the same attitude.
Acceptable to everyone that animals are enslaved for the different things.
I think we're getting there though.
Yeah. I hope so.
You've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Next week on the show, we'll have two interviews for you. First up, we'll have Bonnie Dawson from Action for the Protection of Northern Animals to talk to us about the dangerous loophole in the Northwest Territories Dog Act and the gross mistreatment of domesticated dogs in the North. And for a feature interview, we'll have Neil DeCruz from the World Society for Protection of Animals on the show to speak to us about the plight of the dancing bear trade in India, which still continues today. We here at the Animal Voices show modestly ask you to keep connected with Animal Voices via the World Wide Web. You can do so by signing up on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and you can also join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. Please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or via email. Our email address is radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Please do check out our website, animalvoices.org, where our shows can also be downloaded from. So that's a lot of stuff there. At the very least, I'd say number one for me would be go to our Facebook page because you can find everything on there, Animal Voices Vancouver.
Like us.
Yes. And if you support the work that we do here every week at Animal Voices to bring you original quality programming on the topics of current animal issues and the vegan lifestyle, please show your support by making a donation to us at Animal Voices at Co-op Radio, because we do rely on your donations to keep the show on the air. To make a donation of $5, $10, $20, or whatever you can afford, simply go to coopradio.org and click on Donate Now. And remember to indicate on your donation that it's going towards Animal Voices. And you get a tax receipt for that as well, I just wanted to mention. So please remember to tune in again next week. Thanks for listening, and we're going to leave you with a song called Pig Song in memory of the 1 million pigs that have been buried alive in Korea.
This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
We have two big picture time pressures that really mean we should be acting a lot more urgently than most of us have. And one of them is peak oil or energy collapse, and one of them is climate change or runaway global warming.
I think that most people, even most scientists, continue to underestimate how far down the path to climate catastrophe we've already traveled.
For the most part, we're oblivious to it. We don't want to know about it. We don't want to hear about it.
The one thing I'm most afraid of is that we're going to mount a tremendous campaign to sustain the unsustainable.
At this point, the scientists are saying that the Earth's temperature may increase by as much as 10 degrees. At that point, there may not